In last Sunday's gospel, we heard the calling of Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector of Jericho, who was called out of the tree, called to repay all the debts that he had rung up for those poor people of Jericho. Half of his possessions he gave to the poor, and he became the last disciple to be called into Jesus' service before Jesus goes up into Jerusalem at the end of that chapter, chapter 19 of Luke. That was Palm Sunday. Now we find ourselves in chapter 20, where after Jesus has entered into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, he spends the first 3 days of that Passover week in the temple. And at various points, he is embroiled in debate with the chief priests and the elders there. Luke records also that it was during Holy Week that Jesus sent all the money changers out of the temple and said, "You will not turn my Father's house into a marketplace." So things were getting more contentious as that first Holy Week went on. And now he's being questioned by the Sadducees. The Sadducees despise Jesus. They do not believe that he is the Messiah. And they're actively conspiring with eight other groups to make sure that Jesus does not leave Jerusalem alive when the Passover is complete at the end of that week. By this point, there were nine groups in total that were conspiring against Jesus. They all hated each other, but the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So the Sadducees had joined forces with their enemies, the Pharisees, with the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Supreme Court, with the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, the scholars of the law, the followers of Herod, and the Romans. All of them looking for any excuse in order to have Jesus accused of blasphemy and treason and led out to the cross. This is why the Sadducees want now to trap Jesus on a question about marriage and divorce. And they have the scriptures to defend what they're asking. When they talk about all these brothers having to marry the widow to try to raise up a male son, they're referring to what in Deuteronomy chapter 25 in the Old Testament would be referred to as a levirate marriage. A levirate marriage, Deuteronomy chapter 25. For those Jews before Jesus, there was no resurrection. But there was the idea that you could live on through your children, especially through your male heirs that would carry on your bloodline and the family name. Many people still feel that way today. But if a man was to die without producing that male child to carry on his name and the bloodline of the family, Deuteronomy chapter 25 says that his brother should take the widow into his home and try to raise a child with her that will carry on the bloodline and the family name. So this is a rather extreme case of the use of levirate marriage to have all these brothers dying and marrying the same widow and dying and never producing the male heir. It's a ridiculous question. Jesus knows it. And so he uses it as an opportunity to teach them about something they don't believe, but they should. The Sadducees don't believe in a resurrection. The only way they thought one could live on was through the levirate marriage. You've got to have male children to keep on the family traditions. But Jesus isn't interested in the seven brothers marrying the same woman and in heaven. Whose wife will she be? The Sadducees don't believe in heaven, so there's no faith in their question. But Jesus believes in heaven. He was just hours away from preparing to open heaven's gate by the power of his cross. And so he tells them that only on earth are people given in marriage. It is until death do you part. He reminds us that in heaven, all of us are in total union with God. An earthly marriage is but a preparation for the relationship that all of us will have with him if one day we pass through heaven's gate and gain entrance to the Father's house. It is a reminder to us that marriage is an earthly sacrament. Only three of the sacraments stretch beyond the confines of this life: the invisible eternal mark of our baptism, confirmation, and ordination to the priesthood. But marriage, that covenant lasts only until death or divorce. Now, I remember once getting into a theological debate with my mother's only brother, my Uncle Ed, about how disappointed he would be to go to heaven if it meant he would not be married to Aunt Judy for all eternity. And I thought how strange other people seem to be looking forward to it. We're not here to talk about that. But the way spouses devote themselves to each other and sacrifice for one another and for their children, that is a preparation for the covenant relationship that we will all have with God in his kingdom. Jesus is talking to these faithless Sadducees who have nothing but hatred for him in their heart, and he's talking about the resurrection because that is soon to become a reality as he is about to give his life for them and for us. reminding them that the God who sent him is not a God of the dead, but of the living. It was that hope of heaven that would strengthen Jesus to go out to the cross. It was that hope of heaven that have strengthened countless martyrs throughout time to endure their own sufferings, because they believed that though they may suffer in this life, they would be rewarded in the next, a world without end. It is that same hope of heaven that strengthened so many of our American brothers and sisters who have stood up to defend our flag and freedom, counting God and country more important than themselves. And that's a heroic sacrifice that we commemorate each year on Veterans Day and each year on Memorial Day, and sacrifices we should never forget. Because once people have found something they would give their life for, something worth dying for, they become more fully alive. They have finally found something worth living for. And that can certainly be said of the Maccabees in the first reading today. You only find the books of Maccabees in Catholic Bibles. The Protestants will put it in the Apocrypha, but it is historical and these events are true. Now, Maccabees takes place between 200 and 150 years before Jesus is born at Bethlehem. And as in so many other cases in the Hebrew scriptures, it's a time of foreign invasion. By this time, Israel and Judah had endured invasion from the Assyrians, from the Babylonians, from the Persians, from the Macedonians, and from the Greeks. And now it is the Seleucid Empire, and next it will be the Romans, and they will be the last, because they will destroy Israel forever and disperse the people all over the world. But the Seleucid king is Antiochus Epiphanes IV. His last name, Epiphanes, means God made manifest. Antiochus believes he is a living deity, just as the Roman emperors believe themselves to be, just as the Egyptian pharaohs believe themselves to be. And Antiochus Epiphanes is determined to make the Jewish people worship him and all of the Greek gods of the pantheon that he himself offers incense and sacrifice to. And so he needs to break their Jewish custom and their Jewish traditions. And he sets about a program to make sure all of that happens. People are forbidden to speak Hebrew. They must learn Greek. He makes the men cover up the mark of their circumcision that showed that they were sharers in the covenant. He forbade newborn boys to be circumcised. And as a total abomination, he put a statue of Zeus on the altar of sacrifice in the temple in Jerusalem. But lastly, to make his program spread further and wider, he had to make everybody break the Jewish dietary laws that were laid forth in the Hebrew scriptures. He wants them to break their kosher diet, and the easiest way to do that was to get them all to eat pork. Now that's what's happening here in 2 Maccabees, that the mother is forced to watch her 7 sons have the bacon put in front of them. And if they refuse to eat it, they're going to have their tongue cut out, their hands cut off, and then they're going to be tortured to death. Before this passage begins, the mother encourages her children, don't eat that. Don't do it. That seems silly to us. We would kill for bacon. We can't imagine being killed because of it. But she knows what this is all about, that the king is trying to convince them to break the Jewish law and to worship him, and not one of them will do it. No mother wants to watch one of her children suffer, but can you imagine seeing 7 paraded before you and all of them put to death? She'll need a Levirate marriage by the time it's done, except she's going to be killed as well. But what we see here is that in the face of this pagan king, every single one of those sons refuses to eat the bacon and is willing to die. Why? They said it. Because we believe that our king will raise us up to live again. This shows that during all of those invasions, during all those times of slavery, exile, refugees, bloodshed, that they were paying attention, at least some were, to the message of the prophets who were preparing for the coming of the Lord. They truly believed that God really was sending his son to save them and set them free. It didn't matter when. They would gladly wait in the realm of the dead until the Christ of God came to pry open heaven's gate to give them a heavenly reward for all the suffering they had to endure in this life. Maccabees tells us that even King Antiochus himself was moved by the courage, and eventually the resistance, the rebellion, would win. The Seleucid Empire had to leave. Antiochus was taken from his throne. And there was an 8-day feast to rededicate the temple, and the whole temple facade was decorated in torches for 8 days. It was a festival of light. Today we call it Hanukkah, and this year it will coincide with our Christmas. So when we think of our Jewish brothers and sisters and their festive light, think of that mother and her seven sons that believe so much in heaven, they would die rather than give in to an earthly king's government and its pagan rules. We need to learn from this because we're in an age where government is again encroaching upon our religious liberty. We take them for granted, and soon they could be taken away. There are too many Christian brothers and sisters all over this world that under penalty of death, do they go to mass, and they risk their lives to do so. But once again, they believe in the Eucharist, in Christ, in God, in his church, and Mary and the saints. They found something worth dying for, and now they found something worth living for. And so, as Christians in America, we must stand up for our religious liberty, as so many of our veterans have risked their lives to defend our right and our ability to worship God as we choose. The government may never force us to eat pork. In fact, they'd probably take it away from us. But the government seeks to take away all kinds of other parts of our religious liberty, whether or not we can worship God as we choose, whether or not we can hold to our absolute truth and moral laws, or whether we have to give in to the dictates of governments and insurance companies. It has been said before that if you don't stand up for something, you will fall for anything. So let us follow the example of the Maccabees so that we know who is our king, where is our kingdom, and who we will serve. Let us stand and profess.